Thanksgiving is just 2 weeks away. It's become a frenzy of food preparation and football, and perhaps a holiday we just take for granted. Hi, I'm Rob West. You have to wonder how many people will pause to reflect on what really happened at the first Thanksgiving feast. Well, no worries, because Jerry Boyer joins us today to fill us in and give us a whole new reason to be grateful. And then it's on to your calls at 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial journey. Well, Jerry Boyer is the president of Boyer Research and our resident economist here at Faith and Finance. You can read his insightful columns for World Magazine at WNG.org. Jerry, great to have you back with us.
And always great to be with you, my friend.
Jerry, most folks identify Thanksgiving with the Puritans at Plymouth Plantation and how they survived incredible hardships, but are not aware that part of their suffering was self-inflicted. Tell us about that.
Yeah, these hardships didn't just happen, and they didn't just end arbitrarily. These hardships were the result of bad economic policy. That bad economic policy is what we would call communism. The charter that was granted to them when they came here to form Plymouth Plantation required communal handling of property so that nobody owned their plot of land. You know, the men all worked all of the land and the women all cooked for everybody. And so in essence, I mean, you know, it's a communal family almost. Yeah. And what happened is exactly what you'd expect, which is that people who were strong and healthy didn't work because they knew they were working for somebody else. And people started making excuses. And the women would always say, I'm too sick or I'm too tired, you know, to cook the meal, because they didn't want to really cook a meal for somebody else's husband or for somebody else's children. And the men didn't want to work the land for other people. And so that's what led to the starvation that is the privation that we hear about, the tough times that the Puritans went through. It wasn't just, you know, just sort of the, quote, bad luck of bad weather. But it was, in fact, bad economic policy.
Jerry, some commentators have said that's revisionist history. How do we know this is true?
Because they wrote about it in a Plymouth Plantation. William Bradford admitted the mistake. So the only primary sources we have here all describe this. I think revisionist history is just history that some people don't like. So I remember debating with Jared Bernstein, who was about to go to work for the Obama administration on this. He didn't know this story. So he thought it must have been made up, but it's based on primary sources. We know that this happened. At the time that that plantation was formed, the kind of the hot idea back in England among intellectual elites was based on the philosophy of Plato. And Plato believed in a communistic system. So they were just doing the best thinking of the time. They were just following what the expert economic thinking was at the moment, which is it'll be more efficient if everybody owns everything. Of course, that's not efficient. That's extremely inefficient because it doesn't take into account human nature. So they realized their mistake and they essentially went against their charter and they decided to parcel out land so that people owned their own little bits of land and they worked it for themselves and for their family. And it's interesting, when they did that, William Bradford saw it as explicitly moving away from what he called, quote, the conceit of Plato, the conceitedness, the arrogance, the pride of the philosophy of Plato in order to embrace the wisdom of Moses, which we find in the Ten Commandments, which include thou shalt not steal, which is the foundation of private property. So they understood that they had been following pagan economics and that they needed to go back to biblical economics. And when that happens, everything transformed overnight. People would go out, men would go out and work the fields, and even the women would come out and bring the children and say, we're going to work the fields too. Women who wouldn't even be willing to cook the food now were out there helping in the field because they had gone through a tough time, and now they were working for their family's benefits. And it's amazing how what you know, fathers and mothers will do for the love of one another and for their children in an economic system that allows them to care for those that they love. And by the way, that's something I think we need to talk about a little bit, which is there's a strong tendency to think about focusing on economic productivity as selfish.
Fascinating. All right, when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Jerry Boyer today. We'll talk about the founders and God's providence and putting those uniquely gifted people together in one place and time to forge the Constitution and how that relates to our economy today. Much more with Jerry Boyer just around the corner. Stay with us.
For American Family Radio, I'm Charles Morris with Haven Ministries, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. As we continue to watch the news and stay updated on the world, it can be hard to continue praying for peace. When will the conflict, suffering, harm stop? We can feel like those in Jeremiah 8, we hoped for peace, but no good has come, for a time of healing, but there is only terror. When will the horrors cease? Those of us who know Christ know that good has come. Jesus has come. He's undone the sin and the guilt that disturbs us. Christ has established his kingdom and will once and for all bring peace. What we do now is wait in hope, trusting in the Lord to bring us that everlasting peace. Spend more time with Jesus. Visit getanchor.com.
As the leading advocate for the Christian financial industry, Kingdom Advisors serves the public by promoting the integration of a biblical worldview across every aspect of the financial services industry. And we serve a growing network of thousands of Christian financial professionals, equipping and empowering them to carry biblical financial wisdom to their clients, peers, and community. For more information, visit KingdomAdvisors.com. That's KingdomAdvisors.com.
So Hannah, she's just one of the women who did struggle with infertility in the Bible.
Hannah's Heart with Ann Cockrell and Kendra White.
Hannah took her pain to God, and God heard her and was with her.
Hannah's Heart helps couples process infertility and miscarriage through a biblical lens. Join us Saturday afternoon at 5 Central on American Family Radio. Find the podcast at afr.net.
What if your everyday purchases could support biblical causes? With the all-new Cash Rewards Visa card from Christian Community Credit Union, a portion of every purchase goes to ministries that spread the gospel, combat human trafficking, and protect vulnerable children. Plus, earn unlimited 1.5% cash back. Visit joinchristiancommunity.com. Membership eligibility required. Each account is insured up to $250,000. This institution is not federally insured.
We're grateful for support from Movement Mortgage, who provides residential home loans in all 50 states. Guided by a mission to love and value people and a goal to redefine the mortgage process, Movement seeks to help others achieve their financial goals. You can find out more at movement.com/faith. Movement Mortgage LLC supports Equal Housing Opportunity, NMLS number 39179. For licensing information, please visit nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Well, as we head toward Thanksgiving, we're joined today by our resident economist, Jerry Boyer, president of Boyer Research. He's taking us back to that first Thanksgiving to help us understand the economics behind the Pilgrims and the Puritans there at Plymouth Plantation. Jerry, what you were sharing perhaps may be a surprise to some. Just recap that for us and then tell us how that intersects with the very first Thanksgiving that we'll be celebrating here very soon.
Well, the settlement of Plymouth, which is called Plymouth Plantation, had imposed on it a system of communism, meaning that property was held in common and that men would all work the whole field and women would cook for the whole community rather than men working their part of the field for their family and their wives cooking for them and their children. And that what happened is human nature being what it is, the men didn't work and the women didn't cook. And everyone made a lot of excuses. And so there was a shortage of food and they went through their provisions and they starved. Eventually, they decided that they were going to go in a different direction, and they threw off what they saw as the pagan philosophy from Plato of communism and embraced the biblical philosophy of Moses, which holds to private property. When that happened, then they went from starvation to abundance. So that's the recap.
Mm. Yeah, and where does that then intersect with the story that we're celebrating at that first Thanksgiving?
Well, that's what they celebrated. They celebrated the abundance that came when they moved from a communistic system to a private property system. So they had good harvest because they were working hard. They started trading with the Indians. The Indians would share ideas with them. So there's another capitalist thing there, the idea of trade between people of different tribes. Instead of enmity between settler and Indian, they could share ideas with one another about what's the best way to farm here. And, oh, here's some technology that we have. So there was a mutually beneficial exchange. And then they had abundance, and that was their Thanksgiving. They were thanking God for the abundance. But it's not just that abundance comes directly from God. God also gives us the abundance of wisdom that tells us how to properly order an economy. So the first gift that they needed to get from God wasn't the harvest. The first gift that they needed to get from God was the private property system that we find in the Ten Commandments. The wisdom from God then led to the abundance in the field.
Yeah, that's really helpful. Now, Jerry, of course, several other countries have Thanksgiving-like holidays, but ours is rooted in American exceptionalism, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, because I think, you know, maybe partly because we had this early experiment with communism, we learned in a very painful way about it. But I think the thing that's most exceptional is that William Bradford was a thoroughly committed man of the Bible. In fact, a lot of his writings were in biblical Hebrew. He would keep his diary in biblical Hebrew. That's how biblically entrenched they were. And so they had something to turn from. In a lot of European countries, they see socialism not working, but they say, well, I guess we'll just muddle through, or we'll just blame business or whatever. But in this case, they had a better way presented to them because they were saturated in the Bible. The real tragedy is that this was lost. This is a story that school children would learn for hundreds of years in America. But something has happened, I don't know exactly when, maybe three or four generations ago, where this was dropped. So that when I happened to talk about this story on CNBC with Larry Kudlow, in 2008, I was on there with an economist who was about to join the Obama administration as then Joe Biden's chief economist. Mm. And he had no idea of this story, and he thought I was making it up. Mm. That's tragic, because they went on to repeat the conceits of Plato. They went on to nationalize banks. They went on to nationalize auto companies. And we actually had economic stagnation, some of which is still with us to some degree. So it's, you know, it's one thing to have a tragedy. It's another thing to forget the lessons and repeat them once again. Well, we need these stories to be told again, especially by people in authority.
That's right. And I'm glad you're reminding us of them today. All right, Jerry, let's move on then to the founders. You know, the image of the nation's founders has been, well, bashed in recent years, unfortunately. Do you see God's providence in putting those uniquely gifted people in one place in time to forge the Constitution?
I do, and I also see the providence leading up to it, because this thing that I just talked about, the Puritans really did have an ambiguity about commerce and about the free market system. So they started out with a communistic system, and then they moved to basically free market farming. But they were still negative about other forms of commerce, technology, trade, shipping, things like that. They saw that as not really being genuinely economically productive. So there's a process of about 100 years where people who are in finance and trading are being accused of not really being biblical in their economic system. Some of them were excommunicated, in fact, and then they would offer defenses in their excommunication trials. And over a period of about 100 years after this, the colonialists, the Puritans, gradually come to reconcile their theology with a free market capitalist system, not just for farming, but for everything, for investments, for trade, for finance. And that happens, basically, that's just about done around the time that someone like Benjamin Franklin is growing up. You know, he was sort of the oldest of the major founders. So that influence, that theological shift, takes place just in the right time before the war for independence and the creation of our own free market, private property-based system as found in the U.S. Constitution.
Yeah, that's helpful. So then how would you compare that economy at our founding to what we have today?
Well, we've drifted far, very far indeed. And in some ways, our economy now is a great deal more like the economy of George III that was imposed on us that we saw as tyrannical. The amount of economic control, the level of taxation, the lack of representation. I know technically we have representation in Congress when it comes to tax policy, but when you have such an incredibly complex tax system, it's essentially lobbyist driven. He sent forth his officers to harass us and to eat out our substance, is what we said in the Declaration of Independence about the King of England. Well, now our kings are here in Washington, D.C. So we have backslidden in some sense to before 1776, where we are now something more like the tyranny that we rebelled against. Now, I'm not calling for this same solution. It's different now. I'm not saying anyone should pick up their musket and start shooting at the IRS. Quite to the contrary. We don't need to do that. We have the electoral process, we have cultural change process, we have evangelism, we have the ability to make our case in the public square. So this rebellion, I think, is more an intellectual rebellion against the bad ideas. They were imposed by London on us. Now they're imposed by Washington on us. Well, the reaction is to go back to the lessons lost, which are really found in the Bible, which in economics is very much focused on private property as opposed to government control. And we just need to persuade again. That's the job in every generation, to go back to those basics and persuade again and again and again in order to be free.
And so, Jerry, to head back to that biblical economy, we need to repent, we need to pray, we need to engage and show up. I mean, is that what you're advocating?
Yes, and I'm also advocating we need to change ourselves, because most of the people listening to us right now are Christians, right? Yes. So we can be economically productive, and we can tap into that part of communism that is falsely adopted, which is the idea of sharing. See, the problem with communism is the compulsion of sharing. But to the degree that we don't share with one another as Christians, to that degree we leave a vacuum into which the state tends to try to come in and solve the problem.
Well said, Jerry. We're going to have to leave it there. Thanks for stopping by, my friend. Happy Thanksgiving.
My pleasure, and to you and yours.
That's Jerry Boyer, president of Boyer Research and our resident economist. All right, your calls are next. 800-525-7000. 800-525-7000. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. We'll be right back.
What does the American Family Association stand for?
AFA upholds the truth that all human beings, including the unborn, are created in the image of God and are worthy of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
These values and more are part of our mission to inform, equip, and activate individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of our culture. We also support the church. We want to be a leading organization in biblical worldview training for cultural transformation. Thank you for standing with us.
We are grateful for support from One Ascent Investments on the Faith and Finance program. They manage a comprehensive suite of value-based investment strategies designed to help Christian investors live aligned with what they value most. One Ascent believes that if your values inspire the way you live, they should also inspire the way you invest. This can be a unique form of worship. More information is available at investments.oneascent.com. That web address is investments.oneascent.com.
Forget about Facebook.
The last 10 days we've been banned twice, and is unbanning a word?
They put us under the ban. Christians and conservatives
don't need you, YouTube.
Banned one day, banned again.
AFR programs are now live streaming on the AFA streaming app. Now you can get shows like Today's Issues straight from the source.
Put back on the next.
Just say unbanned.
Unbanned.
Just search AFA Streaming or visit streaming.afa.net to sign up.
We are grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing in the Faith and Finance program. If you have money in a retirement account or just a general investing account, you know the stock market can sometimes seem like a roller coaster. But it is possible to enjoy both profit and peace of mind in investing, no matter what's happening in the market. You can see a short video webinar on that topic at soundmindinvesting.org. Since 1990, Sound Mind Investing has sought to offer financial wisdom for living well. Soundmindinvesting.org.
Here's Rob West of Faith and Finance, heard here daily on American Family Radio.
we understand how important it is for Christians to leave a legacy that will impact generations to come. One way you can do that is through a charitable gift annuity from the AFA Foundation. Call 800-326-4543, extension 345. That's 800-326-4543, extension 345. Or visit them online at afafoundation.net.
My name is Kent, and I'm a member of Christian Healthcare Ministries. I have a friend who actually has great insurance, and she recently had a life-threatening experience, and she was laying in the hospital bed afraid, not afraid for her life, but afraid of what her insurance would or would not cover. And as a CHM member, I can honestly say I just never have that fear. I can't tell you the peace of mind that provides.
Learn more about Christian Healthcare Ministries' biblical cost sharing at chministries.org.
Well, great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Always enjoy when Jerry Boyer stops by. Always fascinating, enlightening, and always in light of biblical truth. But it's time to turn the corner. We want to hear from you now and the remainder of the broadcast today with your financial questions. Whatever you're thinking about, whether it's living, giving, owing, or growing, we'd love to weigh in, help you think about that in light of biblical wisdom. The number to call is 800-525-7000. That's right, we've got some lines open, 800-525-7000. You can call right now. Let's begin today in Kentucky. Frank, go right ahead.
Yes, I was wondering what do you think about a reverse mortgage?
Yeah, they're not my first choice, although I think they have a place, Frank. Tell me about your situation. Do you own your home outright?
Not yet. I always say you never own your home until you pay the last penny.
That's right.
But people have that tendency to think they own it. If you skip a mortgage payment, the bank will let you know that you don't own it.
That's exactly right. I agree with you. What do you think your home is worth, Frank?
I don't know exactly what it's worth, but I owe about $57,000 on it.
All right. And I imagine it's worth at least twice that, right?
I hope so.
All right. You would need 50% equity in order to do it. What are you trying to accomplish? Are you living on a fixed income and you're looking for additional income? Or are you just trying to get rid of the mortgage payment without having to pay it off? What is your goal?
Trying to get rid of the mortgage payment mostly every month. But the way I was wondering, if I did that, I was still old regardless.
That's right.
Jumped out of the fire to the frying pan, you know?
Yes, you would end up owing more than you owe now because there'd be fees and an interest rate on that amount that you owe today, because when you take out the reverse mortgage, they would essentially pay off the current mortgage that you have. So you'd owe that, and then the interest and the fees would continue to accrue. The thing with the home equity conversion mortgage, which is the reverse mortgage backed by the Federal Housing Association, is that, you know, one of the benefits is you're not personally guaranteeing it. So they're essentially only collateral is the home itself, which means if you were to, repay off the current mortgage, as long as you have at least 50% equity, and if they start making then a lump sum payment or a monthly payment to you, obviously anything paid out to you would continue to be added to the mortgage. And you wouldn't have to do that either. You could just pay off the existing mortgage and then just kind of freeze it right there, and then it would continue to grow. But you could be guaranteed that you would never owe more than the house is worth. So if you moved, yes, you'd have to pay it back, but the sale of the home would cover that mortgage. And then whatever is left in equity could be paid out to you. Typically, folks will get a reverse mortgage and keep it until they die. At that point, the home is there to then satisfy the mortgage amount, the loan amount for the reverse mortgage. Again, if the home is not enough to cover it, that's where the FHA steps in. So your estate would never owe more than the home itself. But obviously, it does create challenges if, for instance, you wanted to keep it in the family. Obviously, it would make it more difficult to do that because your heirs would have to pay off the reverse mortgage. But if that's not a concern and you're just looking to free up cash flow either by eliminating the mortgage payment or by getting an income stream coming out of the home by tapping into the equity. That's where a reverse mortgage can be effective. They're not all created equal. Some of them are very expensive, and I don't particularly care for the products. So if you're interested in this, I have a trusted partner that we would send you to at least to explore this. It's Movement Mortgage. They're a Christian mortgage company. They're national in scope. And you just go to movement.com/faith, and somebody would give you a call back. But I'm okay with it, for the purposes you're describing, as long as you understand what you're getting into.
Yeah. Well, I was just wondering about that. I didn't know exactly, because I just needed some reassurance, you know?
Yes, sir. Well, it can be effective for somebody who's living, paycheck to paycheck in this season of life. And, obviously your mortgage is probably your biggest expense, so that would come off the table. And then you'd have the ability to, increase your monthly income stream by a monthly check. And again, you'd not be personally guaranteeing that. So, I think it is a viable option. Now, for somebody who has a conviction to get out of debt and stay out of debt and owe, no man anything, I'm completely on board with that as well. It really just comes down to kind of what your approach is and what works best for you based on your own convictions and values. I hope that's helpful for you, Frank. We appreciate your call today, and thanks for being on the program. God bless you, sir. Let's head quickly to Georgia. Hi, Joshua. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. West, for taking my call. I'm sorry about yesterday. I was afraid if I called back, I might not get back on. I'm going to keep this short and sweet. I heard from somewhere else that we're $33 trillion in debt. Our GDP is about 26, according to their math, that's about 124%. And they were saying that historically countries around 130% default, about, they said 98%. Now, one of the reasons I'm asking this question, I'm totally blind. I'm planning to move down to Florida to get some extra training for a job. And my concern is, if that's true, that around 2025 or so, if I don't have a job, I'm going to be stuck down there without anything. I know we shouldn't live in fear, but I still think I got to try one more last time to get a job and everything, because there's just nothing right here up here in Central Georgia. I'm going to hang up and listen to what you have to say, and whether or not it's what I want to hear, that's fine. It's probably what I need to hear. So thank you and God bless. Love you.
Okay. I appreciate your call. Your math is right. Our GDP sits at about $26 trillion. Our U.S. debt is sitting at about $33.2 trillion. You've got to keep in mind, though, a couple of things. Number one is that's, the public debt outstanding is the number that folks will often look at. And so, for instance, although you've got the $33 trillion, which is often cited by the media, it includes $6.8 trillion that the federal government essentially owes itself due to trust fund and other accounting. So really, the debt held by the public is about $26 trillion, about 98% of GDP. I'll give you my thoughts, though, after this break.
If the heavy burden of debt is robbing you of freedom and peace of mind, Christian Credit Counselors can help. We're a nationwide nonprofit credit counseling organization that has helped over 300,000 individuals in the last 27 years get out of credit card debt 80% faster while honoring that debt in full. To learn how Christian Credit Counselors can help you, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org, or call 800-557-1985.
Target is in the bullseye because of its transgender bathroom policy.
A petition by the American Family Association to boycott Target now surpassing 1 million signatures and counting.
People have their own beliefs and stuff, but what could it hurt? What could it hurt? What could it hurt?
It hurts our daughters.
It hurts you.
It hurts our families.
It hurts me.
It hurts all of us.
Sign the petition to boycott Target at AFA.net.
We are grateful for support from Eventide Investments on the Faith and Finance program. Eventide's approach to values-based investing is grounded in the belief that humankind was created in the image of God, with intrinsic dignity, value, and worth. Eventide calls this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at eventideinvestments.com. That's eventideinvestments.com.
Are you investing in the future of God's kingdom or wonder how your money can make the most impact for His purposes? Kenneth Boa and Russ Crossan wrote the book Leverage, Using Temporal Wealth for Eternal Gain, to guide these discussions and build a financial legacy where moth nor rust destroy. Request your copy with your gift of any amount at faithfi.com. Your donation helps us share God's financial principles with others. Leverage your resources for greater impact today.
Hi, I'm Matt Ayers, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary. Do you want to be prepared for ministry at an institution that you can trust? Wesley Biblical Seminary has been training trusted leaders for faithful churches for almost 50 years. In a nation where many denominations and theological institutions are caving to cultural pressure, Wesley Biblical Seminary is standing strong on God's truth. Earn your bachelor's or master's degree to equip you for faithful and fruitful ministry. Learn more at wbs.edu.
Are you struggling to fit your faith into your practice as a Christian financial advisor? The Certified Kingdom Advisor designation teaches you a step-by-step process to confidently deliver advice that aligns with Christian values. Discover the skills you need to help your clients make a kingdom impact. Get started today by enrolling in the CKA educational program at kingdomadvisors.com/getcertified. That's kingdomadvisors.com/getcertified.
This is American Family Radio, a listener-supported ministry of the American Family Association.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. This is the program where we apply God's wisdom to your financial decisions and choices, help you make decisions in light of God's Word as you're a steward of God's resources. So what's on your mind today? What questions do you have financially speaking? We'd love to hear about it and talk about it together. 800-525-7000. I've got some lines open. You can call right now and get through. 800-525-7000. Now, just before the break, we had a caller asking about the U.S. national debt, concerned that our debt sitting at $33.2 trillion is about 124% of GDP. Our gross domestic product for 2023 is around $26 trillion. What I was saying was there is reason for concern, and the trajectory we're on is not good, and it needs to be addressed. Absolutely. I will say, though, that often that $33 trillion number is just slightly misleading because, you know, for assessing economic impact, because about nearly $7 trillion of that is from the federal government holding its own debt for accounting purposes. So the economics profession has long focused on public debt or debt held by the public, which, you know, brings that down to about 98% of GDP. Now, still, we're not on a good path here. Most economists, for instance, I was looking at a study recently that said we could probably handle somewhere between 175 and 200% of GDP. Now, that 200% would be in the most favorable environment, and that assumes that the financial markets believe that the government will eventually implement an effective approach, because once the financial markets believe otherwise, you know, financial markets can unravel at even smaller debt to GDP ratios. But we probably have somewhere between 15 and 20 years where, you know, unless we make changes, we'd be okay. But at that point, we'd probably, even by raising taxes and cutting benefits, we would still, you know, be have a debt crisis likely looming. So the idea is that this is probably still down the road, a decade or two, probably closer to two, but it is something we need to address. And clearly that's why we saw the downgrade. Fitch Ratings, you'll remember, August 1st announced its decision to downgrade the U.S. long-term credit rating from AAA to AA+. So not the highest level, one notch below that. They did maintain, though, their country credit rating ceiling at AAA, which means that other borrowers in the U.S. can still receive AAA ratings, even though the U.S. was downgraded one notch. Was that political? Is there something behind that? Well, you could argue it both ways, but nevertheless, we're not on a good trajectory. So what do we need to do about it? Well, recognizing it is more serious, this debt situation, than any time in the recent past, we need to support political candidates who are concerned about the debt and annual deficits and will cut spending. We need policies that promote economic productivity, which is the key to climbing out of public debt. And again, that means, again, supporting candidates who will vote to lower taxes, reduce regulations, understand a biblical worldview of economics and wealth creation, that human beings were created to be productive in the image of God, and that productivity creates a virtuous cycle, and that it ultimately should result in giving, generosity, giving back to the God who created us. And when we do that, we can grow our way out of this. But again, it's going to come down to folks who understand that and can make the decisions accordingly. So I think we need to pray. We need to show up at the ballot box. But I don't think there's anything imminent, even though, you know, perhaps this idea of a debt crisis in the U.S. was not even plausible a decade ago. It certainly is on the radar now, but I think it's still quite a bit down the road if we get there. And hopefully we don't. We make the changes we need to make. Now, some people always ask about, well, what about Japan? Because they're at 263% of debt to GDP, and that's true. But it's a slightly different situation. They have a much higher savings rate personally, and you know, we would never be able to get to that level. So nevertheless, we need to make some changes. But at the end of the day, we've got a lot going for us, and we're still the strongest and biggest economy in the world, and there really is no rival for the U.S. dollar at this point. But we need to take action, and we need to handle our own economies, what passes through our hands in light of biblical truth. And that's what we want to do here on this program each day. So what's on your mind today? What questions do you have? The number to call, 800-525-7000. Again, that's 800-525-7000. We've got lines open. We'd love to tackle whatever you're considering today. Hey, before we head back to the phones, let me mention quickly, we're approaching National Collection Week for Operation Christmas Child. The official collection week is November 13th through the 20th, and shoeboxes will be collected across the country at more than 4,500 drop-off locations. If you'd like to be a part of Operation Christmas Child, it's something we do as a family every year, just check out SamaritansPurse.org/OCC. That's SamaritansPurse.org/OCC. All right, let's head back to the phones. Again, 800-525-7000. You can call with your financial questions right now. To Louisiana. Hi, Stacy. Go ahead.
Hey, Rob. I have a question regarding my son, who is 25 years old,
right,
and he has a debit card and a savings account, but what we are wanting to do is start him off the best way to build credit with a credit card, and I just don't have any idea.
Sure.
I don't want him to start off in getting in any debt, and I've heard you speak of NerdWallet. What is your advice for me?
Yeah, you know, I think it is important for him to start building credit. Hopefully he's already been instilled with some good practices. You can continue to walk alongside him in that. We absolutely don't want to get him into debt. And so if you think that's a risk, I mean, depending on his financial and spiritual maturity, you may or may not want to open up a credit card to him, an unsecured credit card. If you did and you felt like he was only going to use it for budgeted items and, you know, maybe there's a recurring charge that he's already committed to, it's a part of his plan or budget that could hit that card every month. It could be just, you know, $10 or $20 a month, and then he pays it off. That will build his credit because that'll be reported to his credit file that he's an on-time payer. He'll have a very low debt to limit credit utilization ratio, which will be a good thing, and that will get him started. The other option you can do, some folks don't want to do this, and I can understand why, but you can add him as an authorized user on one of your accounts. Now, that doesn't mean you even have to give him the card. It's just that now that information that's being reported to the Bureau for your account as you make payments on your own, you know, credit cards, and hopefully you're paying those off every month, that would then be reported to his file. So he, in a sense, inherits your good credit. Now, keep in mind, that works both ways. You know, he'd inherit your good credit if you had a missed payment or a high credit utilization. That would be passed over to his credit file, too, and could actually work against him. The other option besides an unsecured credit card, if you don't feel like he's ready for that, is what's called a secured credit card, where you'd actually put maybe $200 or $300 or $400 on deposit. They issue a card against it. The limit is equal to the amount on deposit. It's then available for him to charge up to that amount. Again, I would use that for budgeted items, pay it off in full every month. But it prevents the possibility of him getting into debt because he can't charge more than's on deposit with the bank. And so there's, you know, a cap on it and that money's already there. So, you know, that's the other option. All three of those, the unsecured card, if you think he can handle it, the secured card that can't go above what's on deposit, and him being added as an authorized user to your account, all three of those will report to his credit file. And assuming all that information is positive, that's going to help him build some credit. So hopefully that helps you, Stacy. I appreciate your call today. It's a great question. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more of your calls and questions in our final segment. Stick around.
Sandy Rios 24/7. It's not a morning show. It's an all-day show, fueled by the wit and wisdom of Sandy Rios.
If you have a smartphone, I think you should download the AFR app.
Sandy Rios 24/7 is on the podcast page at AFR.net.
I have, you know, so many listeners from the radio show who are now listening to the podcast.
Sandy Rios 24/7.
You live my prayers all the time.
Sandy Rios 24/7 on the podcast page at AFR.net.
Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Christian parents are on the hook today because they have to identify the threats to the value system that's being taught to their children in public schools. And their job is to protect their kids from these influences.
Tune in for Family Talk with Dr. James Dobson, weekdays at 6:30 a.m. and 9:30 p.m. on American Family Radio.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to our program. God's blessings to you all.
Absolutely free. We know you've learned to be suspicious of those words, but really, you can get biblical financial wisdom delivered to your inbox each week absolutely free. Articles, videos, podcasts, and special offers on biblical resources. Nearly 60,000 people receive our free weekly wisdom email, and you can too. Create your free FaithFi account by going to faithfi.com and click sign up to begin receiving weekly wisdom in your inbox.
We are grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing in the Faith and Finance program. For more than 30 years, they've been helping Christians reach their financial goals with step-by-step guidance for investors at every stage, from those just getting started to those getting ready for retirement. Through scriptural principles and practical suggestions, SMI offers financial wisdom for living well. More information, including the short video webinar on profit and peace of mind, no matter what's happening in the market, is available at soundmindinvesting.org.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. We're taking your calls and questions today. Let's head right back to the phones. To Mississippi we go. Hi, Evelyn. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I'm blind, but Sunday at church, my daughter read me something in the bulletin that said something about some move that China and Russia had made that was going to affect our accounts, and we was advising people to remove their cash from the bank. I was wondering if you would explain to me what's going on, because I couldn't read it myself because it wasn't in Braille.
Yes, ma'am.
Didn't understand.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So it's called the BRICS, which stands for Brazil, Russia, India, China. And they basically announced after months of debate about various currency and commodity baskets that they were going to settle on using gold as the basis of their of a planned new international currency system separate from the U.S. dollar and the euro, which sounds good. And if they actually did it, it would be a cause for concern for the U.S. dollar long term. The challenge is when you're talking about Russia and China, you know, there's not really many economists. You'd be hard pressed to find one that believe they're actually going to make good on that. They're just known for manipulating their currency, and they would not be trusted to actually have a true gold standard for this new international currency system. And I think for that reason, they're really still, despite that announcement, quote unquote, there still really is not a reason to think that the U.S. dollar is not going to continue to be the de facto reserve currency. 90% of trades globally are still done in U.S. dollars. 60% of the world's reserves are held in U.S. dollars. There's just not even anybody that's a close second. So it's something to keep an eye on, but I certainly wouldn't be pulling my money out of the U.S. banking system. That's for sure. There's really no rival at this point, nowhere else to go with that. You don't want to stick it under your mattress, especially with inflation like it is, because you'd be losing purchasing power. Do we have some challenges, some headwinds here in this country? Absolutely. We do need to address some things. And as I was sharing with a previous caller, we have probably the next 15 years to get serious about doing that, or we could be facing a debt crisis. But, there's no reason, in my view, to exit the stock market, to exit the banking system, anything like that. Does that make sense?
Yes. I just didn't understand it. Not being able to read it myself.
Yes, ma'am. I can appreciate that. Well, I'm glad you called, and I hope that helps to clarify things a bit. And continue to listen to this program, because if things change, we'll certainly keep you updated here. It's something we talk about often, especially on Fridays with Jerry Boyer, our economist, when he joins us. God bless you, Evelyn. Thanks for calling today. We appreciate it. Let's go to Georgia. Hi, Linda. Go right ahead.
Hi. I'll be 75 in February, and I'm retired. And I have $250,000 in my retirement, and I draw about $2,000 a month. And it really nickels and dimes me, and I bought a car on a home equity. I owe $40,000 on that. The home equity has about $100,000 on it because I've been putting repairs and everything on that. Do I need to raise what I make each month or draw out some money, like for instance, the $40,000 and pay the car off? But my financial advisor tells me that I don't need to get into the principal.
Yeah, so I probably would not at this point. Money. Yeah, I would concur with that at this point, just because your account is likely down, and so you have unrealized losses. And so to lock in those losses and then pay the taxes on the money as it comes out, to turn around and pay off the car is probably not the best idea. You're already pulling a bit more than I would recommend. It sounds like you're pulling about 10% a year, right? You're pulling about $25,000?
Yes, give or take. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we generally recommend you try to keep that to no more than 4%, which would be about $10,000 a month. Go ahead.
$10,000 a month?
I'm sorry. $10,000 a year. 10% of 250, or 4% of 250,000.
But I end up paying more in interest if I put it on a card or own my home equity when I have repairs and things that need to be done, and I'm 75, and my children don't need my inheritance, and I would like to travel. That was part of retiring.
Sure.
So all that money's stuck there. So could you explain that to me?
I'm not saying that you're doing something wrong here, and I agree. You don't want to borrow a bunch of money, especially at these interest rates. And even if we didn't have these interest rates, I think the idea would be, yes, you've built up a nest egg here, $250,000. Like you said, the kids don't need the money, so you should enjoy it and spend it. I'm just saying, you said you're, I believe, 75, or 76. So the question is, how long do we need this money to last? And, I'd like for, if the Lord tarries and you're in good health, you may need this money to last a couple of decades or more. And, so we want to just try to take a reasonable amount out every month so that you're not depleting it over time. The idea
But in 10 or 15 years, I'll still have my house equity. I can always sell my house if my retirement came low. You know what I mean?
Yes, ma'am. That's exactly right. And I'm not disagreeing with your approach. I wouldn't necessarily pull the money out to pay off the car at this point, but I do think that you're taking the right strategy here. You've got this money. You might as well use it. You're using it to cover your expenses. I would just be judicious about what you spend and just try to hang on to as much as this as possible. That doesn't mean you don't take a trip every year or something like that, but you just need to know that your withdrawal rate is a little higher than what we would like to see at this point in your life in order to maintain that balance. And I understand you're saying, I'm okay if I spend it down. We just don't want to spend it down too quickly. Is that helpful?
Worth $300. to fall back on.
I'm sorry, say that again.
My house is worth $300,000.
Yes, right.
So I would have that to fall back on.
You would, yep. And you could either take a reverse mortgage on that and turn that into an income stream, or you could sell it and invest it, and maybe you rent something. So, yes, absolutely. And that should be a part of the equation here as you're thinking about your total assets at a, you know, sitting at about $550,000 between the retirement and the home. So I like this approach, but again, I would probably not pay off that car, namely because your portfolio is likely down, and I just would hate for you to lock in those losses right now and pay the taxes at this point.
Well, one quick question, I'll let you go. Can I reasonably raise the amount that I take each month that I would keep from putting anything on the home equity and be able to put it on a credit card, get reward points on that, and pay it off every month? The $2,000 is a crunch when, you know, things come up, car repairs, home, stuff like that.
Yeah. So what is your question there with regard to increasing it?
Well, you said I'm over, I'm at 10%, but
right.
What if I said I wanted $2,500 or $3,000? Then I wouldn't ever worry about putting it on the home equity. I would just pay it off every month with a credit card. But I know I would be paying interest on that with the IRS, right?
Yeah. Well, you'd pay taxes as you pull that money out. And then, yeah, I mean, I think you just have to realize that when you get up to that level, so 250,000, you know, if you're pulling 15%, that'd give you, 37.5 a year or about 3,000 a month. You know, that's going to deplete that account, you know, much quicker than I would like. I mean, that money's going to be gone, you know, before, you know, if you're in good health and you live to age 95, that money's going to run out. So you just need to weigh that and just understand what you're doing there.
Okay. Well, I'm 75 in good health. I probably will live that long by the doctor's quote. So, okay. I'll let you go.
All righty. God bless you, Linda. Thanks for your call today. Let's go to Oklahoma. Hi, Mike.
Hey, how's it going? Thank you for taking my call. God
sure.
bless.
Thank you. How can I help?
My question is I have Blue Cross Blue Shield insurance. It's just my wife and I, and it's about $300 a month for health. And we're just not happy with it. It's a $6,000 deductible, and we're both in great health, no issues at all. But we're not happy with it because whenever we do use it for urgent care, for a cold or something like that, it seems like they're charging. We're still paying. We're still paying for, you know, medical attention of services as well as paying insurance, and it's like we're double paying. So
yeah.
My question is. Is I know there's MediShare. I've heard of MediShare, where it's Christian-based, Christians sharing each other's medical expenses. I looked into that and wasn't happy with what I heard. So my question is there anything else? Because I'm thinking of not having insurance at all and just saving that money that I'm paying.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my personal opinion is if you're looking to, you know, for an alternative to traditional insurance, you know, I like Christian Healthcare Ministries as an alternative. You're going to pay anywhere between, you know, $92 to $260 a month for just two of you. It'll be on that lower end. And the nice thing is, you know, you'd be able to cover those qualifying incidents that are above, you know, $1,000. And so, you could cover, you know, the routine care out of pocket, but you would have something to step in if you had cancer or something that ended up being very expensive. So I kind of like that option to offset that larger risk as opposed to the day-to-day. So I might take another look at it, but apart from that, I really don't have any other suggestions. Mike, thanks for calling today. God bless you, sir. That's going to do it for us. I'm grateful for my team, Devin Patrick, Robert Youngblood, and Jim Henry. Couldn't do it without him. I'm Rob West. This has been Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.